coalition forces and begin striking selected targets of military importance.
It would be a decision which could only be taken once.
There's no argument over the choice between peace and war.
Unconfirmed reports about Gaddafi being captured.
This morning, I want to talk about the future of Europe.
Burning Point.
Hello and welcome to the show with me, Ekaterina Kudoshkina. According to top Ukrainian officials, several NATO countries have begun to supply lethal weapons to Ukraine. Addressing a news conference on the 14th of September, Ukraine's defense minister Valery Heleti indicated that he had discussed weapons deliveries in bilateral meetings with NATO defense ministers during a NATO summit in Wales on the 4th and the 5th of September. He said, and I quote, "We reached agreements in close talks without media about those weapons that we currently need. Those weapons are already on the way to us. That's absolutely true. I can officially tell you," he said. To be more precise, the outgoing NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen said NATO would not send lethal assistance to non-member Ukraine, but member states may do so. Either way, we're talking about sending weapons to a country at war. What does the international legislation say about supplying this kind of aid? And why would the alliance push Kyiv to military scenario despite a ceasefire agreement reached in Minsk? We're discussing these and other issues with our guest speaker, Vladimir Kozin, the head of the group of advisors to the director of Russian Institute for Strategic Studies and professor of the Russian Academy of Military Sciences.
President Poroshenko, soon after the meeting between Ukrainian and NATO diplomats and the sidelines of the recent NATO summit in Wales and Newport, the UK openly declared to the world that Ukraine would be happy to get not only non-lethal, but lethal weapons as well. And five Western nations, members of the Transatlantic Alliance, have already committed their desire to supply lethal weapons to the Kyiv regime. So the threat is imminent, the threat is looming, and it's a very risky game, not only simply like boxing using empty words. There are a lot of reality behind these endeavors.
But Dr. Kozin, isn't there any international legislation which actually outlines the regulations of military support, like they're saying, military support?
Oh, yes. There are some important official documents passed by the European Union and the OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, that prohibits to send huge quantity of arms into the areas where conflicts are underway. Everybody knows that there is a huge conflict inside the Ukrainian territory. So to go by these resolutions and official documents by the European Union and the OSCE, all countries should abstain from selling arms to the Ukrainian regime, because it would mean the extension of conflicts, of armed conflicts, and no peace resolution of the current stalemate.
Our guest speaker is Vladimir Kozin, the head of the group of advisors to the director of Russian Institute for Strategic Studies.
Burning Point.
So, Dr. Kozin, if I get you right, now NATO is discussing an option of sending lethal weapons to Ukraine. On the other hand, from what we have been seeing in the Ukrainian conflict, the so-called Ukrainian army, its level of professionalism could be questioned, which might imply indirectly that the sophisticated weapons which NATO might supply to Ukraine also requires sending there their military counselors. And, well, in fact, their military, their boots.
I don't think that NATO alliance will send their GIs, their military personnel to Ukraine, especially to the southeastern areas of that country. But in terms of counselors, advisors, experts, whatnot, plus military hardware, they will definitely sell to Kyiv. For example, I have recently watched TV footage of a modern tank of the Ukrainian troops seized by freedom fighters in Donbass. Mm-hmm. And inside that tank, I have personally saw by myself electronic equipment with a signature, the Thales company, UK. Mm-hmm. So it means that not only non-lethal weapons, but electronic equipment plus reconnaissance data, intelligence information will be shared with the current Kyiv regime. And this will be not a proper option. It will run counter to all international efforts and all accords and agreements reached so far in Kyiv, in Geneva, in Berlin, and in the last case in Minsk.
If you remember, at the early stages of the Ukrainian conflict, there's been a lot of speculation about American Academy, a private military company, which mm-hmm. is allegedly sending its personnel to Ukraine. But we were always criticized for, like they were saying, not supplying enough evidence of their involvement in the conflict. Mm-hmm. Do we have any evidence now?
Yes, recently, even a ceasefire was reached during Minsk consultations on September the 5th. We have seen reports from the area that when the ceasefire was violated by the Kyiv troops, freedom fighters have spotted a number of volunteers, so to say, from the Western countries, even from the United States, Poland, and some others. Well, actually, the freedom fighters and the Russian side also confirmed that Russian volunteers are in Donbass. But there is a striking difference between Western volunteers and the Russian volunteers or other foreigners who are fighting on the side of Donbass. So why? Because Donbass freedom fighters are defending their own land, their homes, their families. But volunteers from the West who are taking part in hostilities on the Ukrainian Kyiv side, they are participating in genocide, in a military internal aggression of the current regime versus Ukrainian citizens, mainly peaceful citizens, because the ratio between losses of amongst civilians and freedom fighters, militia, right, is probably is around 10-1. So that means that Western nations are pouring arms and sending their volunteers, so to say, to defend Kyiv's regime, deliberately to suppress the desire of a very tiny community for independence and for the rule of law. Well, in this case, NATO member countries, they do not understand that people in Donbass, they are sick and tired of this intervention of Kyiv into their domestic affairs. They will never join Ukraine again. So they would like to create a separate state within the administrative borders of their land.
This is Burning Point. We're looking into why would NATO continue to push Kyiv to a military scenario despite a ceasefire agreement. Our guest speaker is Vladimir Kozin, the head of the group of advisors to the director of Russian Institute for Strategic Studies. From what we've been discussing now, should we get an impression that NATO is really after a military scenario in Ukraine? And in that sense, what would be their ultimate goal? Are they after a long simmering conflict? Are they after a military confrontation with Russia?
Well, actually, they are only talking about a ceasefire and peaceful solution and peaceful resolution. But at the same time, they are dreaming of enhancing the current regime entrenched illegally in Kyiv. And they would like to make Ukraine 100% pro-Western nations, a member of NATO alliance, and a hostile nation towards the Russian Federation. But unfortunately, I would like to tell you that when I approached a former CIA officer, retired now, during an international conference in Moscow and asked him, what is the length of your forecasting in your covert operations all over the world? How far do you see, I mean, in your planning? And he replied that around 1 year. So 1 year is not sufficient in planning this kind of thing on the world arena. So I think that the United States and NATO made a very grave mistake, actually a blunder. It's not an error. It's a very huge blunder that they are helping this regime in Kyiv to survive, to entrench, and to resort to heavy weapons against its own citizens, against its own people. I hardly imagine that during the current referendum in Scotland or in Catalonia in Spain, the central government would ever dream of using heavy weapons against people who are participating in the referendums and they would like to secede.
Well, Dr. Kozin, how do you think Russia is going to react?
Russia has to react very cautiously, but at the same time, very firmly. The Russian Federation should not pull back its military forces from a common Russian-Ukrainian border, be it Crimea or be it very close to Donbass, Luhansk and Donetsk republics. Russia has to read all international agreements before they are signed very carefully, even between the lines, because sometimes unbiased experts and specialists are very much surprised to the formulas that are used in those Poroshenko's peace plan and even in the Minsk protocol signed recently. So the Russian Federation should also attract the world community at large enthusiastically and explaining its stance and rationality behind its policy and explain the proper outcome from this tragic impasse. So there are a lot of vistas of opportunity to find the proper resolution of this crisis. But the only remedy, the only cure-all in this particular case, right now, probably tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, etc., is not only ceasefire or the end of hostilities, but also pulling back Ukrainian regular troops and irregular formations from Donbass beyond the current administrative border, separating Donbass from the rest of Ukraine. That is the solution of this crisis. The other way around, to use military might or to try to emplace dubious papers and suggestions and peace plans, etc., etc., will lead all of us to nowhere. Unfortunately, in this case, confrontation will continue. Military hostilities will prevail over political solutions. So I think that, and I would like to stress once again, that total withdrawal of Ukrainian troops from Luhansk and Donetsk People's Republics and to leave them alone, to leave them as they wish, as they wish. If Poroshenko is fostering another plan to try to win their hearts and minds by positive experience of the Ukrainian economy, etc., etc., why not? He should do it. He should implement this, so to say, incentive plans, but not by military force, but not by military attacks and genocide. Unfortunately, multiple rocket launching system, Grad, have been already used after the Minsk Protocol, plus heavy artillery against residential areas, and we have a great number of killed in actions and wounded in actions, especially amongst the civil population.
Professor, thank you so much. And just to remind you, our guest speaker was Vladimir Kozin, the head of the group of advisors to the director of Russian Institute for Strategic Studies and professor of the Russian Academy of Military Sciences. Well, and now we end this edition of Burning Point, brought to you by me, Ekaterina Kudashkina. Thank you so much for staying with us. Goodbye, and take care.